Furcon is here in the house.
How's it going, guys?
What's up?
So background, who's Furcon? Furcon is my co-founder, CTO at Bebo before we sold. And we've been working together, I don't know, 5-6 years now, maybe 6-7 years.
Yeah, it's getting towards 7, I think.
It's one of those things where you just keep saying 5 years, you know, no matter how long it's been.
But he has an interesting background before that.
Very good background. You want to give us like the, give the highlights.
All right. The highlights, I grew up here in the Bay Area. I got started just programming as a kid. And so I had a unique experience where I worked at a .com when I was 15. And that was kind of like...
Were you going to high school at the time or did you drop out?
I was going to high school. I had just finished my sophomore year and I was really into computers. And my dad was like, hey, I know this guy. They need to hire some people. They're looking to make like a website at the time. They had a router for hotel rooms. So it was like hotels wanted to put in DSL and kind of like good internet. And they're like, oh, we needed this interface, like the, you know, Linksys interface for your router now.
Just the HTML side of things.
Yeah, and HTML at the time was really nothing. It was like you could put some stuff. And I showed my dad how to make a menu and he was like, wow, this is like groundbreaking. There's no JavaScript. There's
so how much were you getting paid at 15 to do this?
If I had worked the whole year, it would have been about 120K.
Wow.
pretty ridiculous.
So this was .com boom.
.com boom, probably because they're hiring 15-year-olds, but you
right.
know.
And then that happens. Then you did an e-commerce thing.
Yeah. And so that company didn't work out, obviously, you know, spending money.
Paying 15-year-olds 120K.
Exactly. And so I kind of was back at high school and then I'm bored and I'm really into computers and gaming. And, you know, I had this idea that like, hey, people like to kind of trick out their cars. Like they like to put lights and, you know, fun things in their car. Like, why don't people do this with the computers? People are really passionate about it. And so I looked it up and I found some forums online and people were doing this. It's just, there was nowhere to buy things. There's nowhere to do things, especially here in the US. So I started an e-commerce store kind of accidentally. I was like, oh, like these things are really expensive. If I buy them in bulk, I just get them cheaper. I'll sell off some. I'll have some more cash on the side. And I think we started $800 of stuff in the corner of my garage. And then within the first year, we did $1 million of revenue.
Wow.
And it was like,
how old were you?
I was 17.
So holy shit.
In high school at the time. And so that was pretty crazy because it went from, you know, one corner of the garage to full 3-car garage to living room, family room. Like there's boxes everywhere. My parents were super supportive of this, obviously. But, and so that was kind of like the early days, I would say.
And then we'll fast forward because there's a lot more to the story, but we'll do the highlights. So if I'm listening to this, you know, whenever I ask people their background, really what I'm trying to say is give people a sense of who you are. And also it's kind of just like credibility. It's like, why should you be interested in what
you're trying to make? You're trying to impress people.
Yeah. It's like, this is the time to basically brag. So I'll brag for you because you're a pretty humble guy. You don't brag a lot. So the other interesting parts are, took a couple years off, played poker professionally, kind of in Europe, traveling around. That was fun. When you came back, did your own startup, failed. But then the next startup, which you started with Adam and a couple other guys, you guys tried and failed on a bunch of ideas. I think probably 9 ideas.
Yeah, it was about 9 ideas across 2 or 3 years that we tried. Kind of, you know, one idea, I would say, was real serious. We tried that for about 9 months. And then you're going through like 3-month chunks of like really bad
right.
ideas and attempts. And then,
and my favorite anecdote of this whole time, because I think this is very, very, you don't hear people talk about this, was sometimes when you guys were in between ideas or you just were, it wasn't working. What did you do? You'd come to the office and do what?
We would just play FIFA all day. I mean, literally.
That's what you guys did at Monkey Inferno.
Yeah,
we would do it for like an hour. These guys would just like, that was the day.
Yeah, it was like 8 hours of FIFA. Oh, man, that was a tough day. Let me get back home and kind of get back to it.
But. And did you think that was weird? Like, Adam and those guys had success. So if part of you was probably like, look, if these successful guys think this is all right, this can't be too bad. But like, I would be anxious if we were doing that.
There was some anxiety, but they were super calm and collected. So that kind of was like, well, why am I worried? Like,
well, so Adam was pretty wealthy.
Yeah, he previously worked on a couple of ad tech companies and they had grown to be pretty big. I would say like, you know, one was worth maybe $50 million and, you know, the one before that might have been in that range too. And so he had done some stuff. John, who is the other co-founder there, had worked at like VMware early and he had worked at ad products like that got bought by.
And they were self-funding the company?
Yeah, they were self-funding. And so
I cannot believe how I would be like, no, we're getting to work.
I'm self-funding
like, this is
the
my
FIFA
fucking
game.
Money.
Yeah. And I think we worked hard. I mean, the cool thing was you sat around, you talked about things. You
got how many people?
Ideas. We were probably like 5 or 6 people.
Got it.
So it was pretty small. It wasn't, I mean, we had a good office in Palo Alto, bigger than we needed, but you could tell they're not worried. I shouldn't be worried. You sit around for a week, you get some ideas. Then you go and work on him, and it all felt pretty natural at that point.
And the outcome of this was what?
Yeah, so you cracked the nut finally.
Yeah, so we had, you know, they had a previous background in ad tech. We had made this product called AppLovin. That was an app where you could see what apps your friends were using. So it was like a social network where if you're playing Candy Crush, oh, it says, hey, Sam's playing Candy Crush and you should play too. And we're like, wow, this is pretty interesting. People really convert with this. This should just be an ad product. And then that kind of drove it and said, wait, we should just make a real network out of this. And then we sat down, we built that for a couple months, and then it kind of skyrocketed after that.
And how big is it now?
They're really massive now. It's been a while since I've been over there, but you know, a couple years back they had a big liquidity event, over 1.4 billion. So, and I think they've probably grown in multiple since then.
Yeah. I mean, I heard that it sold like only 3 years after it started.
Yeah, it was really fast.
And it was doing like $600 or $700 million in revenue, like some crazy number.
Yeah, it was magical to see what product market fit really looks like. Like, I always thought, oh, these things are working. No, they weren't working, and this was what working looked like. And it was probably one of the best versions of it. So maybe my view is a little skewed on that. But the first month, it was like, man, we just jump up to like 10,000 plus in revenue a day, and then you just kind of keep skyrocketing up from that. And like, it's pretty crazy as an engineer too, because now your servers are being hammered, you're like running around all night, like pulling all nighters just because money's flowing and you got to kind of keep it up. And so that was kind of crazy,
so,
but fun.
So the App11 story is $4 million in self-funding initially, then they raised a small strategic round, or I don't know exactly what the total is, but about $5 million total funding, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it was.
And then the first liquidity event, they sold a portion of the company to a Chinese company for over $1.4 billion. And right. So that's like massive capital efficiency. You were, you know, CTO, kind of co-founder there. So we met after that. We started working together, became, you know, really good friends, and have built a bunch of stuff together. And what I like about you, which is why I wanted you on the podcast, is not necessarily, we're not even going to talk too much about App11. That's just establish who you are. You are like me. You're an idea guy. You always have a bunch of ideas. You see interesting stuff, but you're deeply technical, but then get the business side and the product side too. And there's very few people who do that.
I'm definitely going to ask about App11 in a little bit.
Okay,
Before we even get to the ideas, I got to tell you something real quick because this is related. Yeah. So my best friend started Vungle, which was App11's competitor. They raised $16 million. When they got acquired, they had $100 million in cash. What did it sell for? $750, half of what you guys sold for. Very successful. Yesterday, this was after you left. Yeah. So we have to apologize a little bit. Yesterday, Lance Armstrong popped in and our episode got ruined. Kind of ruined.
Or made, whatever.
It was hectic. And we did this thing. It was cool. Sean, you left. Yeah. Jack was here. It was me and Lance and Adam and Jack just chilling right here. And Jack's kind of savanty. Like, he's like real smart, but he doesn't pay attention to a lot of things. And we were talking about the podcast, and I was saying, Lance, how big is your podcast? He said, it's like whatever, 100,000 listeners. He goes, it took me a long time to build that up, you know, after I got cut off. And Jack was like, what, cut out? What happened? Like, Apple shut you down or something? He goes, no, you know, like from the incident that happened 7 years ago, like I everything dropped off. And he goes, Jack was like, what do you mean? And Lance looked at,
explain it.
Lance looked at me and he goes, he's like, is this guy serious? I'm like, yeah, dude. He's like a business savant is what happens. He doesn't know. And he goes, this is awesome. Sam, you got to bring more people like this around me. And he goes, Lance goes, Jack, I basically went from hero to zero overnight. Like, I lost everything.
Yeah.
And Jack was like, oh, okay. It was hilarious.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
And if you, Jack did a whole episode, and you can kind of tell he's like, and the stuff he cares about, he's so deep in the
weeds. He's like Rain Man.
And then other stuff he's completely oblivious to, which is awesome.
Yeah, it was so funny. Jack started your guys', or maybe they were first, I don't know, but competitors. So that reminded me of that. So what do you want to do?
I want to hear some ideas. You said you have a story. Was that the story?
I'll tell it tomorrow.
Okay, cool. So we want to have guests that come in and bring their ideas, stuff they find interesting. So either little phenomenon they've observed, ideas they've been cooking up, something off their list they have on their phone, whatever it is. So do you have stuff like that? Do you have a list of ideas
he
you
does.
Keep or no?
I wrote down some ideas for this.
Oh, okay,
I usually just keep them up here and like, you know, the important ones make their way out. Well,
let's talk about the process. Where do you get a lot of like, when do ideas come to you?
Usually when I'm not trying to come up with an idea.
Like in the shower or
yeah,
whatever.
In the shower, driving, just kind of around, not really thinking about anything, and then something pops up. The second one I would say is like when I'm reading online, like if you read something interesting, you're like, wait, that's cool, but it would be cooler if it was, and then like that's kind of where my mind wanders.
Right. I think that the best idea is you just steal,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
So like it's kind of like that, you're like, oh, but what if you applied it? Like the way this restaurant's working, they should actually apply that to like Indian food and it would be way bigger.
Right.
Yeah, it's like remixing, right? It's like, I want to sample some ideas real quick, and then I want to turn it into my own idea.
Right. So what you got? What's interesting to you?
Okay, so I'll start with one that we went go-karting a couple weeks back. And so I'm really into kind of VR, AR. I mean, you know this. I've kind of gave you an Oculus just so you can, you know, feel my
You mind. Gave him one?
Yeah, I gave him an
Great Oculus. Gift, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was like, John, you got to do this. You're never going to buy one on your own. You're going to be a skeptic forever. Here you go.
Are you using it?
Yeah, because he was telling me, he's like, there's this one thing, because I was skeptical. I was like, is there any good games? Like, what am I going to do with this? And he's like, dude, you got to try this Poker Stars thing. And I was like, okay, what a VR poker? Why do I need that? It is fucking amazing. It is like, have you tried this thing? Have you seen
Well, I've done boxing. I've played all the games, but I didn't
You got to try
one.
The poker one. It's incredible.
I'm going to go buy an Oculus just to play.
Yeah, seriously, you should. They're sold out, so it's going to be tough, but you know, maybe we can get you one too.
You really can't buy one?
Right now, they're out, dude. They're totally... From Christmas, they just completely sold out. And then they haven't been able to refill it. They said it was January, then February, and now it's March. And then they're talking about all these delays from China.
That's a good sign for VR.
Yeah. I mean, they totally... it's the first device where I looked at it, and I said, I can give it to somebody that's not a VR junkie, and they would actually get excited about it. And I think the poker one is great because you actually... People want to build these really immersive experiences like boxing, but... Actually, you don't really want entertainment like that all the time. I actually want more sit on the couch experiences.
Yeah.
And so, you know, some of the things I've been thinking about in VR is like, what can I build while I'm on the couch?
Yeah.
And so this idea I had is not about that, but that was the tangent in VR. But we went go-karting. And, you know, when you go go-karting, it's really about how quickly do you make these turns? How fast are you? How good of a driver are you? You know, how aggressive are you? You know, things like that. And afterwards, we were just kind of talking about some ideas. And I was like, dude, it'd be cool if we could, you know, go to a go-karting place, but it's like Mario Kart instead, where you have these AR goggles over your head, and it's not about quick turns, and it's like a longer track where you can kind of like have some space, but I, you know, would digitally go over this box, and I now have a weapon that I could shoot at your car, and if I hit you successfully, your car kind of shuts down for a second, and you're stuck, so you're like the real-life Mario Kart.
Is this like the sandbox thing?
So this would be like Sandbox or like Museum of Ice Cream. It'd be a place you go, put on this thing, Correct. And play with a bunch of friends.
I'm big
strangers.
On Sandbox.
Like that, laser tag. It's like modern-day laser tag.
Exactly. Do you think that Sandbox is a big business?
I think Sandbox is fantastic. I mean, it's hard to see if it's going to be successful or not because retail has all these problems and having space has all these problems.
But that's not retail.
Well, yeah, it's not retail, but they kind of have retail spaces, right? Like they want to be...
Brick and mortar, right?
Yeah, they want to be like in a spot where there's a lot of...
Yeah, I mean, it's just an activity. It's just like escape room or something.
It's like escape room, but it... escape room, and I know guys who own like 200 escape rooms.
Are they awesome?
It's an amazing business because escape rooms are super lightweight.
You don't do anything. You just have a room.
You have one person. Yeah. You buy the kit and you just keep like reassembling the room and you have these like very small footprints.
How big is that company?
Well, it's not one company, but it's like you can just own a different franchise.
But, yeah, but like rooms. You can own a McDonald's franchise, but they still report revenues as one.
Yeah.
This guy's private.
Like, I've never been in. I will never go to an escape room. That's my fear. I don't want to.
Is that claustrophobic?
Because I'm really claustrophobic. I don't like flying. I will never go.
In general, VR or AR experiences are going to be, I think, fantastic. And you could see theme parks going to this. Like I heard about a theme park that has a roller coaster ride in VR where they give you goggles. You're in this kind of mechanical thing, but then you're actually in a dungeon and there's lava and like it's a totally immersive experience. And I think that people are going to experience it first like that. And I could totally see you coming up with all kinds of different content types. And whether it's Mario Kart or escape room.
That's a great point.
So here's a cool model of this. I have a buddy who worked at this company called 2-Bit Circus. Have you ever heard of them?
No.
So the guy, the founder, his dad started Chuck E. Cheese as Nolan, whatever the guy's name is.
Atari guy.
Started Atari, started Chuck E. Cheese. Now his son started this thing called 2-Bit Circus. And I love the concept. I think the son kind of, I don't know the guy, but like my read on the situation is just sort of like, ADD, wants to do a million things, not really like executing on this business as he should, but the concept's amazing. They go city to city, traveling circus, like Cirque du Soleil or wherever, and they pop up this thing, and it's like a weekend thing where parents bring their kids, and all the attractions are like digital wonders. So it's like VR thing,
How big
AR
is that?
Thing, a hologram thing, and they were doing really well. Every city they were going to, they're selling out like crazy, but he was also getting distracted, and they were doing things like, a company would be like, hey, we'll give you $500,000 to do our company retreat.
Yeah.
And then boom, the whole company, the CEO comes in and says, hey, we had to go do this corporate retreat. And the company's just like, dude, we need like one direction.
Okay, quick break. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about my Saturday morning routines. So every Saturday I wake up in the morning and, you know, some people watch cartoons, some people read the newspaper, some people check the mail, Some people exercise. I go to quietlightbrokerage.com and I check out what's for sale. So if you don't know, Quiet Light is a platform where you can buy and sell online businesses. So if you don't want to start something from scratch or you don't know if your idea is any good, you can go on here and you can see ideas that are already proven, they're already working to some extent, and you can either sell your business or you can buy a business off here and try to grow it and improve it. And so if you've been listening to the podcast, you know, one of our most popular episodes was with Ramon Van Meer, who, you know, sold his soap opera blog, even though he'd never watched a soap opera in his life. He built one of the most popular soap opera blogs for $9 million in cash on this website. He has bought multiple businesses off Quiet Light as well. And we had Paul on here. He sold his FBA business for seven figures on Quiet Light. So it is a fantastic place to sell your business. It's a fantastic place for me to look for businesses. Like, I'm on it right now, and I see a kids monthly subscription box. It started in 2018, so it's fairly new. Asking price is $149,000. So you could buy this on an SBA loan. You don't have to put too much money down. And you know, it makes $50,000 a year in profit. And there's ones that go all the way up to millions of dollars in profit per year. So whether you're looking for something small or something big, Quiet Light's got a great little selection. And it's not just like everything that's for sale. They curate and they qualify. Only certain businesses get in and get on here. And when you're interested in something, they have all the financials in a folder organized. They have interviews with the founders that will tell you, you know, what, how they run their business, how many hours a week they put in, that sort of thing. Very good business. All right, so for any listeners for the podcast, they're offering a 25-point checklist to see how sellable is your online business. So if you have a business right now that's making money and you're interested, you would love to sell it someday, check out this thing. Check out what the 25-point checklist is to see how sellable your online business is. To get the free guide, it's at quietlightbrokerage.com/myfirstmillion. Again, that's quietlightbrokerage.com/myfirstmillion.
Can you look up Dave and Buster's revenue and look up Chuck E. Cheese's? I bet Chuck E. Cheese is owned by private equity.
Chuck E. Cheese probably makes a killing.
And if you've gone to a Chuck E. Cheese,
they're way
Chuck
down.
Cheese
they
has
went
gone
way down.
To shit.
Like, well, where I'm from in Missouri, where they were probably popular, it's like where like trashy poor people go. I mean, it's pretty yeah. Whack. Like I wouldn't go there because it was famous for like the parents would fight, get drunk and fight.
You don't get divorced.
Yeah, like Chuck E. Cheese. It was like Pee Wee Hockey and Chuck E. Cheese. That's like where parents get drunk and fight. What's the number?
Dave and Buster's is $332 million and $896 million for Chuck E. Cheese.
Annual revenue. So Dave and Buster's $330 million. Chuck E. Cheese almost $1 billion annual revenue. But definitely ripe for like doing something new because these things are stale.
Is Chuck E. Cheese public? Did you say it's a public company? If
like trying to buy stock.
Well, I want to see what the income is.
Trying to buy Chuck E. Cheese, you know?
No, I'm into this. I think that these things are cool. I think I'm terribly into it. When I tried Oculus, I was like, I'm going to quit my company and only do this.
By the way, random story. I found this YouTube channel once that was talking about all these old brands that are just gone to shit, like a Chuck E. Cheese. And he was like, this guy just short stocks. And he was like, my short pick of the year is Tootsie Roll. And he was like, you ever met anyone who likes Tootsie Roll?
I love him.
He's like, people who like Tootsie Roll are all 35 and up. He's like, no kid wants Tootsie Roll. They go out for Halloween.
They're a public
company. If they get Tootsie Roll, they throw that shit away. He goes, Tootsie Roll has no other products. It's just Tootsie Roll and their population is dying. He goes, secondly, the owner is like some 76-year-old woman who will never sell the company. So nobody can turn it around. Nobody can change it. That company is just going to
die. Tootsie Roll is its own
public company. And so he was like, you should short the stock. So I watched this 2-minute YouTube video and I was like, I took out a short position. It did great. It's been awesome.
That's badass. Is it public?
Link over here.
Yeah, this guy.
No.
They tried to go public and it collapsed.
So another thing that I would do, I love this. I would also, Six Flags has had a hell of a turnaround.
A positive turnaround.
So there's this guy named Bob Pittman, and he was one of the inspirations for me starting The Hustle because Bob Pittman, he created MTV when he was in his 20s. And then he went and started this thing called the Pilot Group, which launched loads of different email newsletters, including Thrillist, which is like a huge thing. It's like a $1 billion media thing. Anyway, Bob Pittman is now the CEO of iHeartMedia and formerly was also the CEO of Six Flags. And he turned it around and it's really good. It's been around forever, you know, and it ebbs and flows, but it's good.
Yeah, I think entertainment can always level up. And when you're leaving the house to go do something, the more immersed, the more exciting it is. It like, that's what you want. Like, I can get all the rest of the stuff at home, but Like, that's why I think Sandbox is fantastic. Like, right. The only negatives I've heard is, hey, I've gone to it twice. It was similar content, but they're going to work that out. They're going to keep growing it. I think it's going to be amazing.
I love this.
The spinoff of this idea for the lazy people that I have, because I was like, okay, you got to go to this place and go go-kart. I'm like, all right, what's the other
version? Yeah, why can't I stay at home?
Correct. So if you replace the carts with drones, and you let people sit at home on a controller and control these drones.
Real-life drones.
Real-life drones are flying around this warehouse, and I'm fighting you. And again, same thing. It's all digital, so I can hit something, shoot you. Your drone just, like, flies and breaks. You got to go and start over again.
So there's a pit of people who just go pick up the drones.
Okay, so, all right, I can add to this. There's this guy I know. I don't know if they're public, so I won't talk about him yet. But anyway, he's got what they did was, in Vegas or in Nevada, where it's really cheap, they bought something like 100 or 1,000, a significant amount of claw machines. You know claw machines?
Like for arcade machines?
Yeah. And you download the app and you pay a certain amount of money and you control the claw machine remotely.
Fantastic.
And it picks up the item and drops it down to the thing. I've and then you this. Just get...
It's huge in Japan.
You just get emailed like
they mail you a gift card. Thing, yeah.
Or I don't know if I don't know what the mailing system is. I don't know if you actually get mailed that thing or if it's a gift card that you get sent. But...
I saw my friend doing this on his phone. I was like, what are you playing? What game is that? He goes, oh, there's an arcade in Japan and I'm controlling the claw.
So
I was like, what? Yeah, this is crazy.
We had talked about it at some point.
Okay, but here's how my buddy's building this business. He's building it to be he's building it to where it's going to take off and they're going to capture all the value and it's just going to slowly die.
I guess
he's a known fad, basically, is what you're saying. Like, he knows it's a fad.
Yeah, which I love. I like that, those things. Right. But that's how he's building
it. You could do it on, like, Wish products, because they're so cheap that you could kind of, like, have a subscription thing where it's like, hey, you actually get one random Wish product.
Right. Like, that's what Wish should do. You're browsing Wish, and after 2 minutes, it's like, enter bonus round. You have the claw in our warehouse. Pick something up.
I'm into this. I think it's cool. Awesome.
All right, what else you got?
Okay, so have you guys used...
Hold on. Here's what we'll do, actually. In the next couple of days, I'll come prepared with some Six Flags and Chuck E. Cheese numbers.
Okay, cool. Excellent.
I'm interested in this.
I want to hear these numbers, too.
So. I want to know what the startup costs are for Sandbox VR.
And I'm curious, tweet at us if you like, because we nerd out on, like, I wonder how that business does. And we go look up the numbers and figure out who this guy is, who's Bob Pittman, and how much income do they make. I don't know if we're unique in that, but if you like that stuff, like either in the Facebook group, just My First Million, or on Twitter, tell us if that's like, just be like more of that or less of that. Just be honest.
Yeah, that's great. You know, you're going to get your listeners to tell you what they
want. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, because that's the weird thing with podcasts. You don't know what they want. Yeah.
What else?
So in general, like I look at themes. So it's like, okay, Apple releases a bunch of random devices. So I'll call them AirPods, not really random, but this Apple Pencil. I don't know if you guys have seen this.
I have one. You know? It's amazing.
Yeah, what's $125?
It's expensive. And like the iPad Pro, it's expensive. But then I'm like, great, this new capability is there. What product exists for it? And so... you know, recently I've been kind of playing around a lot with the iPad, and I'll kind of try to show you guys this.
I can hold the mic. Or
do you use, are you one of the, like, computer, you get rid of the computer, only use iPad? I think that's weird. I think it's fucking weird.
I like this in certain cases. Like when I'm traveling, it's a lot better than me lugging around my laptop.
Did work pay for that?
No, this is mine. So I just
Furkan doesn't like to submit expenses, reimbursement.
I'm really bad with stuff like that.
When we sold Biba, how many unreimbursed things? How much dollar amount did you have? I bet it's like in the tens of thousands.
Yeah, it's definitely in the 5-digit range. I should be better at that. But you know,
Adam did that. I had to pay him $5,000 because he wouldn't like submit shit.
Life has been good to me, so I'm not really gonna.
Not stressing it.
Anything, yeah. But
General theme is like new hardware comes out. What can I do with this?
Yeah, that's the general theme. And so one of the things I've been playing with is this app called Flow. And it's basically like this kind of whiteboard app, right? And so it's kind of hard to show, obviously. But the idea for me was, you know, you sit in a meeting room, right? And you love the whiteboard. You love getting up and moving.
Yeah, he does that shit all the time.
You like getting up.
I like to get my Steve Jobs on.
Well, he always has like analogies over shit. He's like, we're trying to build a race car, but let's start with the bicycle.
Yeah, that is the analogy that we go with. And so the idea was, okay, you take this kind of experience with the iPad and pencil, but this whiteboard over here should just be digital, right? So if I want to show you something, I just start drawing here. And it just shows up there. You're like, no. And you want to kind of feed off of it, and like we could just have our
own. Okay, so for those who can't see what he's saying, so he's basically saying you got a little iPad in front of you, a little tablet, you're in a big meeting room. If you should be able to quickly sketch something or write something or draw something, and it just use the whiteboard as a display like it's a TV, basically.
Correct. And then it's remote friendly, so everybody can get the same whiteboard experience. Because, I mean, what happens if you're remote?
That happened to me yesterday. I was remote conferencing, and the guy gets up. He's like, here's what this really means. He drew something on a whiteboard I can't see. And everyone in the meeting was like, oh, yeah, that makes total sense.
And you're like,
I'm just the bitch on video conference.
I've talked to a bunch of people. So do you know this guy named Wayne? I forget his last name. He sold something to Twitter.
Yeah, they're doing digits now.
I
think it's Ma or Ha.
Anyway, I was talking to him. He said they're 100% remote. And I was like, how do you do that? Because we're struggling with this whole whiteboard thing. And he was like, man, there's this one app that they never update. And that's kind of what we've hacked together to use. This is a problem that...
Yeah, I think people are going to remote work both because there's really good talent elsewhere that you're like, man, this is a perfect fit, but you're not here. And that's not a good enough reason anymore. And then the second thing is just cost. Like if you're in the city, like people... They kind of don't like, you know, they don't want to pay that much for their house.
So just basically making the whiteboard work for remote workers.
Yeah. And also,
or even if you're here. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I still want a big view of it if I'm here. Like if we're all here, we want to get that.
That's badass. I'm into it.
And so the pencil and the iPad, I think, is a good combination to that, to where people will have that around. I think it'll become more common. Now you can kind of connect all these groups together.
So last podcast, I was saying meeting tech. Makes meetings more effective and efficient because all like so many billions of dollars are spent in people's time in meetings.
Do you know how cheap? I mean, it would cost way less than you think to make this. You know that? Okay, this is a
screen.
This is a 55-inch. I think out there we have a 65-inch TCL 4K. Or no, we didn't get the 4K. 1080p. You know how much that costs?
It's like $399 now.
No. It was like $250 or $180. It's like...
It's probably cheaper than this whiteboard.
That's the retail price.
Yeah, like on Amazon, I bought it for, I think, for sure less than $300, maybe less than $200.
Yeah, I believe it. Screens are really cheap. And so where else can you put screens? And I think you can actually enhance the meetings. If somebody puts up slides... I want to write over the slides. Like I think you unlock more capability than just supplement what you have today. And I think that that's where this will become superior than us going to the whiteboard with, you know, those Expo pens and kind of writing there.
Right.
So
meeting tech.
Yeah. Meeting tech.
Right, I didn't get it yesterday. I mean, I was,
but now you're getting it.
I didn't have
a good example.
He said a meeting in a box.
Yeah. It was bad. It was bad.
I like your other idea of the meeting, you know, the AR.
I was trying to get to that, but then I fumbled the initial thing. I said meeting in a box, and it sounded stupid to me.
And then
so
Lance Armstrong showed up.
Yeah, Lance Armstrong showed up, and I felt like a chump.
It's a meeting in a box. That was fucking stupid.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
The other one I like is, so everyone has AirPods on now, right? And I think AirPods did one thing like Apple does really well is nobody wanted to walk around with a Bluetooth headset, right? I think we all agree you didn't look cool. You look like
tacky.
It was a known douchebag thing.
It was like having the cell phone on your belt.
Yeah.
Like,
great analogy. Perfect. And so I was like, great, people have AirPods now. And so what else can you build with this? Again, Apple's unlocking capabilities in hardware. So what software can you build? And so there's two ideas. One's mine, one's somebody else's, but I'll take it as my credit.
Yeah, exactly. Whoever says it, it's theirs.
Yeah.
Exactly.
By the way, Apple or AirPods, how much?
10 million units in the last X amount of time.
So what's that? Is that 10 billion in sales?
Yeah, just multiply by, let's say, 100. It's just a
billion
roughly.
Plus in sales, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be a Fortune 500 company.
Yeah, I agree. It's fantastic. And so one of the things that I was thinking about was, great, if I have these on all day, can I just have this on... kind of connected to like my wife or like somebody, right? And so whether you do it for work or for personal, you always have it on. There's no audio flowing. But then if I'm like, hey, Sean, what's up? It knows, do you have your AirPods on? If it doesn't, it tells me, hey, he's not there, but you can record a message. You'll get it later.
Right.
But if you're there, you'll just hear my audio and you still aren't on yet. You kind of opt in again to be like, yo, what's up, man? Like, it's like, how do you take the phone call away from like that? And you're like, I'm not going to give this capability to everybody. There's a couple of close people in my life, like my wife, that I'm going to be like, great, I just want to have this on and this capability that's there. And so
it's like in The Office, they do this in the TV show,
oh,
The Office.
Oh yeah. Jim and Pam have
Jim
their
Pam.
Thing just constantly.
Yeah. The headset.
But this is good. Cause it's not on when you don't want it on. So let's say I have my AirPods in, you have yours in, and I'm walking around, I'm at lunch, I have this idea for the podcast. I basically just say, yo, Sam, what we should do is we should do this. And then you basically receive, but you're not sending back unless you say whatever the keyword, like the, you know, like how Alexa works, right?
Like it's like Sean or whatever it is.
And that's way more lightweight than me picking up my phone and starting to type, or phone call. Like, who wants to do that, right?
Yeah, so phone calls feel weird 100% right now.
Yeah. I'm less bullish on that than the first two.
Okay. Well, we'll do that. The second version of this idea with AirPods was, you know, Farza, right?
Yep. So
Oh, your homie?
Yeah, one of our friends. And we're doing a small hackathon at the house, and he's like coming up with this idea again for AirPods.
Wait. You're doing a hackathon at your home, like, for fun?
Yeah, just for fun.
Damn, that'd be...
You do this like every week, right? Or like 2 weeks?
Like, so what do you guys do?
Like, Jake's here. Jake, did you go to the last one?
Yeah, we just kind of sit around a table. We're on our laptops. We're talking about ideas. We come up with something, and we just kind of try to make it. Usually, you don't end up finishing on the first one, but then the second one you try again, the third one you try
God,
again,
and it kind of... fucking nerds are the
Jake,
best.
Jake, what'd you build? What'd you build at the last one?
You want me to talk about it?
Yeah.
So Jake was making this thing where he was like, it'd be cool if you could test your website from, like, locations around the world, but it would, like, video record what it looked like and how it loaded. So not only do you get this, like, technical...
Not waterfall, a number.
Yeah, and then you could show people, like, this is how crappy our website looks like from some random country or in the U.S. and what it looks like for other people. And so...
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
Everyone's kind of testing numbers, but, I mean, we're a visual...
Yeah, creature, what you right? care about is, oh, look how long that took to load. Look how shitty this looks.
Have you heard of
device.
User testing? Is it user voice or user testing?
Testing, yeah.
You know user testing? That's like a $150 million a year business.
Shout out to my mom, works at user testing.
Really? It's huge, right?
It's big. They're trying to go public, you know, so that means they're at that scale where they're doing 100 million plus.
Yeah, and all they do is there's someone in the Midwest who's cheap. Who
screen records.
He goes, all right, well, let me look at your website. Okay, I'm scrolling down. I don't really know
so
what this means.
So that's more about like confusion. This is more about performance.
No,
right?
They're similar issues.
Yeah, and I think today he's looking at it like a performance tool, like how do you kind of make it load well? But I think you could totally look at it and apply some machine learning to it where it's like, this doesn't seem to work well. It's below the fold on these devices, right? Like some of those things, when you design it and then you like put it together, you're not thinking, oh, what does it look like on the iPad?
Right.
And then you kind of just show it like that, and then you have a video, but also it could detect and say, man, this is like your main button.
That's
it's
awesome.
Showing up down here, and you know, you could.
What are you going to do with this?
Good job, Jake. I like that project.
Right here. We'll figure it out.
What's it called?
What were you saying? What was the other project?
So this idea was around cooking, and you're like in a kitchen, and you're like, oh, I want to like hear these recipes and things like that. And so, again, your hands are dirty in the kitchen.
Yeah.
What do? You pull out your phone, your laptop. It doesn't make sense, right? Like, and so the idea was you have your AirPods on. It kind of walks you through the steps, and you can go next, go back, and it's like, you know, a little recipe thing. I forgot the name that he came up with for it, but I think you could come up with a better name for it. But, you know.
Kitchen in a box.
Yeah, kitchen in a box. There you go. I think he called it like kitchen pods or something. And I was like, that doesn't.
Right.
That's
have you. This guy named Andrew Mason. You know that name?
Yep.
He started Groupon. He, a few years ago, his second act, he started this thing.
Detour.
There it is. They shut it down and he pivoted to
Descript,
a podcast thing.
Look at us.
And anyway, what was the first one? Detour. It was awesome. It was so cool. And this was before AirPods.
So explain
I used to do them all the time, but I understand how it wouldn't be huge, but I was a power
cool
user.
Product, not a great business.
Yeah. And so what it was is, you know how when you go to a museum and you have a guided tour that says like, all right, when you get to this point, press this thing. And there, and then you press the button. You're like, all right,
tell you about it.
You see this painting. You see, there's a small little smudge that you'll see up left. That what happened when he got angry. He did whatever. So what they do this, but they do it for cities. So it's guided walking tours.
Really interesting.
But you know, This American Life. Like you know how it's like really highly produced podcasts where you can like hear noises. And they did that, but it was It was work with your GPS. And what they would do is they would say, all right, walk past the street, past Bush Street, keep walking. And then it would play music. And then it would tell when you got there. And it would say, now look down to your right. You see that hole that was there? That actually came here from this time. And it's awesome. It's so cool. But he shut it down. Anyway, what you're describing is almost like the cooking version of that.
Right. The utility version of
which
that.
Would be significantly larger than the Detour version because you cook all the time. The Detour version, I would do it on like a, when my wife was out of town, I had nothing to do.
And it does suck to have your hands covered in food and then be like, oh, let me go to my iPad or my phone and like try to like scroll and click and zoom and like figure out this recipe. How many tablespoons was it supposed to be?
Has there ever been a big business built around recipes other than an ad-based media company?
Not sure. That's the problem with a lot of these ideas. You start thinking too far ahead. You're like, I don't want to go do this thing because what does it turn into? But I think generally the concept, if you took guided tours, like that concept, and you said, what else in my life could be guided?
That's interesting.
I think there's a couple of very interesting businesses there, or at least interesting products, right?
Totally interesting products. Maybe interesting businesses too. Totally interesting products.
I think there's a workout version of this that's doing all right, which is like you go to the gym and it's like in your ears and it's music plus telling you what to do.
Yeah, I use it all the time. Aptiv, you know what that is?
No, I haven't seen it.
It's similar. I use it on a regular basis. I pay $100 a year for it. Ethan spoke at HustleCon. Tens of millions in subscription revenue. It's what you're describing, but it's for working out.
So I think if you have a great product in a space where a lot of people are doing it, you can come up with a business plan like $100 a year that matches some.
I agree with you.
So people cook, people go to the gym. Like, what else are they doing day to day? Like, I think guided meditation is another one that. Like,
oh, yeah. Really there's the model.
Right.
And so there's probably five others in that space, but I think AirPods made it different than Bluetooth headsets and headphones, you know, like.
So here's a little guided meditation fire. One. Yeah, I know. That's why we bring him in. That's why he gets the seat. For meditation, a lot of people don't like to sit and meditate. Like that just doesn't do it for them. Their mind races, all this stuff. And like the answer right now is like, no, that's the point. Do it. And like, sure, that might be true. But for a lot of people, what it means is like, fuck this. I'm going to do something else. And so there's all these other types of meditation, like transcendental or whatever, where you're chanting. It's like a little more active. And there's all kinds of meditation. Hiking is meditation. Exercise is meditation because you're controlling your breathing in a certain way. You're clearing your mind space and you're freeing your mind. And so I'm curious if somebody can do this sort of detour version that's about walking and, you know, it's basically guided meditation, but it's active, not sit down on a pillow and do nothing for 30 minutes or whatever it is.
Yeah, like when I would do those detours, you did them, right?
I never did one.
Well, I did one where I went to the Castro, and it was all about the AIDS epidemic, and you got to know Harvey Milk. You know, the gay activist that was like killed, whatever. He was a gay activist that was murdered, and it was during the 80s when the whole AIDS thing was going on. And the guy talking, he was like, "Now this is the last time that I hugged Harvey before he died." And then he's like, "Now this house up here, like these guys lived here, and on top these guys lived here, they all died." And I was like, so emotionally
right. Okay, that gets me thinking. You know, I think this would be not. I don't think this would work. But like, you know, yesterday you and Lance Armstrong were both like, the podcasts I like best are these true crime ones. What if you did a true crime version of the detour thing, where it's murder mystery, kind of creeps you the fuck out as you walk around.
That's cool.
With real crimes from your city.
Yeah, or you have to. So we on Trends, we did a report. End, you get mugged. We did a report on this. These app. What are those called? Again, you know what I'm talking about.
Give me
Serial. No, like these serialized video apps. The lady who started it, she sold her thing to Songify. Man, I gotta remember what it was. Anyway, you get it's like choose your own adventure app.
Okay,
for thriller novels.
For watching things. Okay, interesting.
Basically, we did a report on it. Our hypothesis was that actually the erotic novels, romance novels, is the biggest segment.
Oh, you're talking about Hooked.
Hooked.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hooked.
Right.
Anyway, I think it's a... I don't know if it's a great business, but it's an okay one.
They scaled up revenue. Hooked was doing, I think, 20 million plus in revenue, if I remember.
Yeah, but I think churn correctly. Was stupidly high.
Yeah.
Anyway, also going for teens. What we're describing is... And when we did the report, it was romance novels and thrillers had but the highest
here's
performers.
A general principle though, like Hooked is the modern day Goosebumps. So when we were growing up, we would read Goosebumps books, and that was what hooked us as a kid, and you love to read. And Hooked said, well, now every kid's got a phone. What if we delivered this through this kind of SMS format, but it's these like scary stories, Goosebumps style. And what you were talking about earlier with like, you know, Chuck E. Cheese, modern day. If you're trying to brainstorm ideas, this is one format to think about. What did I love as a kid? What's the modern day version of that? And because
that's a great framework.
People's desires tend to stay the same.
Yeah.
It's the tools, the technology that updates and opens up new opportunities.
That's a good framework. Yeah. Can I ask you about App Lovin'?
Yeah, I got one more idea.
Oh, go for it. So,
I'll kind of plug a company I invested into. So I invested in this company called Lucid Drone. I think I told you about it. They have they basically created a drone that can window wash big buildings. And so instead of sending like a 5-person crew and a scaffold and whatnot.
Where did you find that?
They were a YC company. So, you know, YC produces still fantastic companies. I like these guys because it was like, we got this, you know, it's not just drone tech and then it's
God,
out of nowhere, but it's like.
That is awesome.
Specific application.
Yeah, specific application. And then you think about it, you're like, yeah, five people hanging from a building or one guy working the drone from the bottom. and washing it. And
are those legal?
Yeah, and so they're out there in a couple of cities. I think there's going to be small regulations. They're going to have to go, but this makes sense. It's a lot safer and a lot better.
When did they go come out of
washing? Saves you money if you're the building owner. Safer than having humans up there trying to wash windows. Sad way to lose a life.
What a bold idea.
Great idea.
And what they did is they actually stopped. So they tried to go to the building owners, and they were like, oh, man, the building owners are like, well, we have a service. Like, you know, it's too complicated. So they went to the guys who were servicing the building. They're like, hey, I can make your business more efficient. Instead of sending five guys out per job, you could do five more jobs. Instead of renting this crazy scaffold, you just lease our drone. And it's like, you make their business more valuable. You're not taking their business. And then you don't have to go do all the building-to-building sales.
Oh, my God. I love this.
One way of looking at it was, oh, we're going to put those guys out of business. Instead said, no, you're my customer.
Correct.
We make you more efficient.
Exactly. And I think that's some of the best tech I see is that. It's not about replacing the whole workflow. It's like, how do we make these people more efficient? How do we allow them to have more capabilities? And then they can do more. They can do a better job. And that's kind of like, I think, what I look for in the emerging tech, especially
Lucid drones.
Lucid drones.
So the other genius thing about that is if you wanted to do this, you would either have to go sell every building, and that's a lot of sales. Or if you go to the company, like you said, the company that already does the window washing, they might have already 50 clients. So now one sale gets you 50 buildings.
Man, that's badass. I'm big fans of boring things like window washing. I think that would be right up my alley. And to add this thing to it would be neat. And never, if you told me that someone had that idea, I'd be like, what? No. Yeah.
it's really interesting. And so my spin off the remix of their idea was probably you guys, I don't know if you have a car, right?
Yeah,
I have a car.
Great. You guys both have cars. So I thought maybe none of you guys would have cars out here in the city, but I never wash my car. I never go to a car wash.
Me neither.
You know, if I could just have a little drone that sits in my garage that can come up, wash my car for me every so often, or if you're in a place where it snows, like how do I pour some water on the windshield so I don't got to go do that and I can get into the car? Like, that's what I want.
That's
so
you, I like that.
You know, this was like a huge failure cherry.
But that was humans.
Yeah so that
this is a Roomba.
Yeah, no, I'm
Roomba
not saying,
that washes your car.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. That failed. But I looked at like the background of why I was like, that's so stupid. Who would on earth think that was a good idea? It's a big thing in a lot of different countries. That and check this out, bring gas to you.
In foreign markets, that's like the way that gas works.
So car washes, I say wash funny. I always have to correct or tell people I say it funny, get prepared. Car washing.
Can you not say wash?
I can't say it's a Midwestern thing. Wash. I can't.
I was like, it's easy. It's easier
car washing
than giving the disclaimer.
No, I can't say. I can't say car wash. No,
you just can't do it.
My good. Mouth does. It's like L's.
Now
and
you have
R's
your interview questions.
Car cleaning. You know,
car cleaning.
If somebody says like, "What's your greatest weakness?" It's like,
I can't say wash.
R's. Rogue R's that just make their way into my words.
It's a Midwestern thing. A lot of people say it. That's interesting, but I never would have thought. That's kind of cool. But how on earth could you build a machine that does it?
I mean, that's the thing.
Does the drone need to be pretty smart to do that or no?
You know, I think the thing I like about this technology space right now is a lot of the research work is done. And so people have made drones that can fly, that can follow you. Like there's literally Skydio.
Yep.
It's $1,000. You go running in the woods. That's their like demo video. And it follows you.
If you haven't seen this demo video, search Skydio.
Is that bullshit though?
It's amazing. No, it works. You literally go, you like throw the camera
well,
in
the
air.
Well, I've seen the
one. The other one failed.
Yeah.
These guys say they can do it.
How about this? Go on YouTube and look up the users who are doing this and they're recreating it and you can see it works.
Okay.
And so
for like snowboarding and skiing and stuff.
Yeah, snowboarding is another one. I mean, GoPro was like one step up, but now if you got this drone that can
follow you around.
God, I love this shit, man. Drones and VR just.
We need a drone filming this. That's just whoever's talking, it just turns to them.
Oh.
And great. Just does the cut.
It just picks up the right mic and the right person.
I had one of the first DJI ones and it fell out of sky at 1,000 feet.
No, yeah.
It ruined it.
That happens. But a lot of this technology, there's been so much research work done that's moved it forward. And I think it's at the spot now where it needs application engineers and not that same, you know, you don't need to be a PhD with computer science and all these math degrees to go create this technology. You know, you take the work that they've built and they've kind of established and then apply it to these things. And so flying a drone is trivial now. Building a drone is trivial now. And then the software is easy to program a drone to fly. Object recognition and computer vision is easy now. And so you combine these two, let's call it easier technologies now, because of all the research work that was done, and then you can kind of create this product from it. And so I built these small drones. They're like these little 4-inch drones. They're able to fly around.
You have?
Yeah. I programmed my own flight controller. That one didn't work as well. I used a pre-programmed flight controller. That worked a lot better. But I get really excited about these technologies when I, without a college degree, without a deep technical expertise, can go and learn about it. And I really just use Google. Like, that's my source for everything.
How old are you?
I'm 35.
You're one of the more interesting people I've ever met.
Okay, great.
I'll wow.
Lance Armstrong yesterday. So.
He's blushing. Look at that.
He's not interesting. He's cool. I mean, he's interesting, but he's
and
badass.
What's interesting to you?
My interests align with yours, but he's more intelligent and more technically savvy, and he could actually make the things that I wish I could make.
Yeah.
Can you talk about App 11? Because you said something. So the other day I was talking to someone about businesses, and I'm like, when it's working, do you know it's working? What's that feel like? And you made a comment earlier, like, it's the first time I've ever seen where just
this is what working feels like.
Yeah. Right. What was that like?
It's the feeling of like when you're slamming on your brakes in the car, and the car's kind of doing its own thing, and you're like, I'm not controlling the car. It is just flowing on its own. It's like, it's that feeling where, you build all these products, and even at Apple, and we did 9 ideas before that. I've done this for a long time where I'm just trying idea after idea. I try to get people to use it, and you're looking for all these good signals and you're trying to spot it. And then when it's really working, it's not about spotting it. It's so obvious that there's no question that it's working. And so it's all the charts are flying up, but then every day you're not even like, man, is it working? Is it not? It's so obvious. I got to do X, Y, and Z to solve, these problems that are coming up kind of day in and day out. And so it's definitely a feeling where the pull from the market is so strong that there's no middle ground. I always thought it was like, I'm going to kind of realize when I'm close to it, but it's actually very binary. It's like, you're here and it's not working and you're trying to push into the market, which you need to do. But when it happens, it just kind of takes off. And, I don't have really good analogies for it yet, except for that. Like, it's like the loss of control. The market is in control almost. And you're just like trying to catch up and like, get into that mindset of like, okay, great, this is working. We're going to keep like pushing whatever we need to do to kind of support this case.
What was the revenue growth? I mean, you guys were at zero. And then was it like 1 month it could have been like 20 grand. The next month it was like a million. I mean, was it that substantial?
It wasn't that crazy, but I think the interesting thing that I learned was there were a lot of players in the market where you'd go to this weather app, right? And the weather app would do like, you never realize the scale of some of these apps even at that time. It's like, man, this thing is doing 200 million, impressions per day. And I'm like, a weather app? Like, really? Like, why is it so big? And then you're like, great, if we get this customer, these things can happen. And so I think
the weather app does how many impressions?
I forgot which weather app it was, whether it was WeatherBug or the weather app, but it was like 200 million impressions a day. Like, and I was really surprised at some of the scale of some of these apps. And like, yes, we had the best ad platform. Yes, we made all these small tweaks to the product to like make it work better. And we made our server scale and we did all these things. But I think to me, the fascinating thing was there were all these major players. You didn't actually realize how big some of these opportunities were. And kind of working at App 11, I was like, wait, I want to go do this. And like, when I left there, it was like, I'm not like a huge fan of like ad products. Like, naturally, that's not the product that I get excited about. I love money. So I like, great, it's a fantastic business. I like that. And I was like, I'm going to go make these apps and games that are going to go do this. And actually, that's how I ran into Sean. I think he had checked out one of my games after, I think we connected on AngelList. Was that right?
Yeah, I saw him on AngelList and I was like, something doesn't add up. Either this guy's full of shit, because who would leave this company that's crushing it? Like, most people, when you finally hit a grand slam, you want to do the victory lap and people stay for 7 years and then they write this cheesy letter about how great the journey has been and they're finally ready for their next chapter. He basically left after 3 years. You weren't even fully vested, right?
Yeah, I left a little bit on the table. Again, I'm not complaining because everything's been fantastic.
But it was something counterintuitive. I was like, why would this guy leave? Either he got kicked out, he got fired, he's not good, blah, blah, blah. I was like, or this guy's amazing. He really just does love. His story was like, I just love startups. I want to build something that consumers use, not really an ad tech platform. And he was like, I was interested in mobile because I saw how big these mobile apps were on our ad network. So he locked himself in his bedroom. It's like, I'm going to learn mobile in the next 6 months. And he just built a bunch of Android games. And then I saw him on Twitter tweeting back with people who played his game. And I was like, dude, none of my developers, all the developers I have in my company that are great, none of them would ever go tweet at a customer and be like, hey, I'm going to fix that bug. I can make this better. Hey, what do you think about this? So I was like, there's something different about this guy.
What apps were you shocked at how big they were? A weather app does 200.
The casino game apps. I mean,
that's not shocking, is it?
The size of it was definitely shocking. Just because you always assume they're big and they're addictive, but then and then Candy Crush in their initial rise was the first time in the industry where I heard like, man, like this thing is a money printing machine. It's like, you know, they would, you know, and not all of this was at AppLovin. It's like once you're an ad tech, you're like learning about the industry, you're meeting other people, and you're like, hey, these guys are willing to just blanket pay $8 for a user in the U.S. And I'm like, okay, well, that seems pretty expensive. Like, why are they doing that? And like, how much are they making?
$8 is what they were spending?
Yeah, I think at that time it was like, hey, for like a male, you know, 18 to 35 or something, it might be $8 or something like that. And then on the other side, I talked to somebody over there and I'm like, they're like, yeah, dude, we make like $20 on them like in like 7 days. And I'm like, and maybe those numbers are slightly off, but like they were making a multiple to where you were like, wait, so you just have this machine where you just press this button and you put in money and, the, you know, 7 days later, three times more money come out. And I'm like, wow, like, how do I get that? How do I empty my bank account every single day to go do that?
Well, you guys had that a little bit with AppLovin.
Yeah, AppLovin had that. I mean, I didn't have that, right? Like, I don't have the same mechanic. Obviously, you're at this company, you're vested, you have a shared interest in the long run. But, you know, me being me, I was like, I want that. Like, I want the ability to have that and then the freedom to work on things that I'm really excited about. And so I tried that. Obviously, it's a lot harder than just, you know, one person in their bedroom doing it. But
what did Adam at AppLovin say? Was he like, this just, we had no idea? Or was he methodical enough to see?
Adam is so fantastic at execution that it's just like, he's like a machine. It's like, you know, when the thing I really loved about him and the things I learned the most from him were like, when you wanted to go do something, like, you know, sometimes you're like, oh man, this situation isn't working.
And Adam's the CEO of AppLovin.
Yeah, he's CEO of AppLovin. And, you know, you have these situations where it's like, I got to go do X, or you really feel like you got to go make this move. This deal's bad. Maybe this hire was bad or this hire was good or something like that. A lot of people kind of wait on it a little bit after deciding and you kind of create some time. What's a good time to do it? For him, it was like, okay, we'll just go do this now. Like, what's stopping us? And then, you know, the other things like that were, you know, I started there as kind of an engineer. And then very quickly, he was like, oh, you could run this team. You could manage the whole team. I was like, great. We talked. And then that's kind of always been my experience that like that never really gets communicated. And then it feels like, cool, I'm like the manager, but not. Like, I think a lot of people end up in that situation, especially in companies. And then like the next morning, it's like a meeting with the whole team. He puts the org chart up. And then every time we changed it, the same situation happened. He was so clear and effective with his communication and execution that I was like, like, I really need to be like that. Like, that's what, like, I think A-plus execution looks and feels like day in and day out. And it's like, it's not emotional. It's very logical. It's very quick. And I think speed in these situations helps create clarity because when you...
Or the other way around, clarity helps create speed.
Yeah, or both, right? Like, you know, and I think clarity in the sense that if you delay it, your team becomes unclear. And then it gets a little muddy. And then you're like, wait, what's going on here? Why is this guy kind of acting like that and that person not? And I think... just being very fast and quick in that execution. Once you decide, you should go and execute it. And I think that that's the thing that I learned is like, how quickly can you do that and how effectively can you do that? Whether it's an email, and I'm really not good at this. It's kind of one of the reasons I point at it because I see myself kind of like, oh, I'll wait on this a little bit or send this email tomorrow. I don't want to open up this can of worms right now. Like, and then it's actually, that's the exact opposite trait. It's like, just go have a bias for action and kind of go do that. And so, from him, I learned just an amazing amount in like, how do you operate at this level? And I mean, since I've left, they've grown so much that it feels like I was only at the 1% of it. Like, I feel like I don't know 99% of the story anymore because they've grown well beyond that. They've expanded into other areas. They're really big now from the revenue side. They're really big now from, you know, what their marketplace is, and they're very well known. And, you know, I kind of get all the benefit from being there a long time ago, which is great for me. But, you know, I'm sure there were more learnings that I missed along the way.
This whole monologue on AppLovin, that's going to be our clip.
Nice.
That was a good one.
Cool. We should wrap for today.
That was awesome, man.
But Furkan works with me across the street, so anytime we want to do this again, we can do it again.
So we'll have people...
we'll put your Twitter handle in the bio, in the notes of this, and so people can get, you know, follow you, get, you know, tweet at you, whatever, after this as well.
And we don't know... I'm still uncertain as to how many listeners we have, but I do know that last time I asked for reviews, we got a few hundred of them in a handful of hours, maybe 24, 48 hours. So if you like this one, tweet at him. You could say your handle in a second and then let us know and we'll figure out what next to do.
Yeah
My handle is Furkan R on Twitter. That's Furkanr.
Awesome. Thank you.